Nick Thompson. This recording is not legal advice. Instead, it's a simple dramatization of a client who's come into the office and we're discussing over simple problems that go on during the average interview. It should help you to review the average problems that you may have in your bankruptcy and how to prepare for it. Hello, Mrs. Smith. How are you doing?
Oh, just fine. Thanks a lot, Mr. Thompson, for seeing me today. What my problem is that I can't pay on my mortgage, and I'm just wanting to know if bankruptcy is the solution for me.
Well, you know, when you're thinking about bankruptcy, there are a couple of factors that you might think about. First of all, you know, whether or not you need to do this as a Chapter 7 or do this as a Chapter 13. Quite often, people file these bankruptcies as a Chapter 13 in order to deal with a mortgage. But however, they might also file this as a Chapter 7. A lot of times what I will do is I'll look at what your income and what your expenses are. I'll look at whether or not you really wish to keep the house and whether or not it's best for you, and whether or not any of these particular bankruptcy chapters, whether it's a 7, a Chapter 13, or 11, applies to your situation and which one is the best tool. Each one of the chapters is similar to a tool, like a hammer, a wrench, or a screwdriver. And the tool that you use for one situation isn't the same tool that you want to use for a different situation. At the same time, the bankruptcy code requires that if you happen to make enough money and you have enough money left over in disposable income, that you should pay back something towards your unsecured debts, even if it's only $100 or $200 per month over the next 5 years, and you'll be on a budget. You would lose your income tax refund checks each month to the bankruptcy court, and that money would be turned over to the trustee if you were to file a Chapter 13. But as a Chapter 7, your bankruptcy would only take a few months and you would be over with the case fairly quickly. So you said that you're involved with a foreclosure?
Yeah, I'm having trouble making my payment. You know, I had an adjustable rate and they raised the payment on me, and now I just can't afford it. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, you know, there were some changes to the bankruptcy code back in 2005. Before the 2005, a lot of the petitions that were being filed really weren't all that accurate. And the purpose of the new law was to put more people into Chapter 13s. They felt that far too many people were filing Chapter 7s, the petitions weren't as accurate, and that filing as Chapter 13 helped people to save their homes, help them to live on a budget more, and as long as a person could afford about $150 per month into a Chapter 13, they should be filing these cases as a Chapter 13.
I'm a little unclear. So what exactly is the difference between a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13? One, you have to pay some money back, and the other you don't, or?
Well, for some people, they're wanting to catch up their payments on their on their house that's gone into foreclosure. In a Chapter 13, you can catch those payments up, and you can take up to 5 years to catch those payments up. In a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, a Chapter 7 is far better suited for people who have a lot of unsecured debt, and they just want to get rid of that unsecured debt. Maybe medical bills, it may be credit card debt, whatever the unsecured debt is, Chapter 7 is far better suited to getting rid of that unsecured debt, whereas the Chapter 13 is better capable. More geared towards handling secured debt or what we call priority debts. There's certain debts that we're going to remain responsible for even if we file bankruptcy. These may be debts due to income taxes that are less than 3 years old. It may be debts for child support, alimony. It may be debts due to other things that normally aren't discharged in a bankruptcy. When you first file a bankruptcy, there is something called a stay that goes into effect. It's an automatic order that goes into effect the very second that you file it. No judge needs to sign an order in order to stop your creditors from collecting from you anymore. This order goes out and it stops any foreclosures proceedings from going any further, and it's effective the very second that the bankruptcy is filed.
So they won't call, they can't call me up and harass me anymore?
They're not supposed to legally, okay? Now, it takes 7 to 10 days for the order to get to these creditors, okay? Because it has to be printed up and then it has to be mailed out. And quite often it'll go to the collection center, who may take a little time before they send it on over to the, it may go to the payment center before it takes a little time to go on over to the collection center. So it'll be about 7 to 10 days before all the creditors know about it. You should get a letter in the mail to yourself within 3, 4, or 5 days after you have filed your bankruptcy. And it will tell you on that 341 letter the date of your hearing. It'll tell you who your trustee is, where you're supposed to show up for court. And you will be showing up at a 341 hearing about 4 to 6 weeks after you have filed your bankruptcy.
Well, what if I don't want to file a bankruptcy? I just want to let my house go back because I really don't have very much equity in that house. Is there a reason why I should file bankruptcy even though I don't have much other debt?
Well, you may want to file a bankruptcy anyway because you may owe a deficiency on that home. That may keep you from buying a house later, or it may be that someone purchases the debt, or it may be that the lender tries to collect on the deficiency.
So even though I let them have the house back, you know, if there's extra money owed, they could come back and get me for that?
Well, there's a deficiency that you'll owe, and it's possible to be sued for that. There's a possibility that if you let the house go back, that there may be tax consequences if you let it go back in what's called a deed in lieu of foreclosure. If you let a house go back with a deed in lieu of foreclosure or something such as that, there is something called a forgiveness of debt, and your lender may send in a 1099 and it may cause tax consequences. It's the same as if you ended up earning that amount, that difference between the sale price and what you actually owed on the home.
But if I did file bankruptcy, then I wouldn't have to worry about that?
No, there's no tax consequences if you file bankruptcy. There's no forgiveness of debt because there is no ability for the creditor to collect anyway.
So they can't come against me for the tax liability, and they can't come against me for any deficiency if I file bankruptcy?
That's correct.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you know, why should I file a Chapter 7 versus a Chapter 13? You know, if I'm going to let the house go back, either way, does it really make a difference, or should I file a Chapter 13 if I'm going to keep my house?
You would file a Chapter 13 if you're trying to save the home.
Okay.
Okay. If you have the ability to catch up these payments and catch up the house over time, then you'd want to file it as a Chapter 13.
Okay.
If you wanted to let the house go back, you would want to file it as a Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Chapter 7 bankruptcy would stop the foreclosure procedure temporarily, and it would cause the mortgage company to take an extra 6 months period of time to do the foreclosure. But a Chapter 13 would stop it permanently, because in a Chapter 13 you'd be catching up these payments. And like I said, you could take up to 5 years to catch up these payments.
So basically on a Chapter 13 then, I could keep my house, keep the equity that's in my house, if I have any. You know, I don't know what it's worth. I have no idea if I have any equity. But then I would just continue making my regular house payment, and the payments that I'm past due on would just get spread all over time for me to catch that up. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. You would be catching up your payments over the next 5 years. Okay. Now, during the next 5 years, you are living on a budget. During the next 5 years, those income tax refund checks that you would be getting would be applied towards your creditors. It would be applied towards catching up the mortgage payment, in your case. If you had nothing but unsecured debt, it would be applied towards your unsecured creditors, okay? Mm-hmm. You would have a budget to live on. If your income increased, then perhaps your expenses would increase as well, and it may be that your payments don't increase. But if your income increased quite a bit and your expenses didn't increase, then your disposable income increases and you can afford to pay more to your creditors, perhaps catching up this mortgage that you're behind on even faster.
Well, I guess what my concern is that I've had difficulty making these payments with just the debt that I have now, and then if all I'm going to do is have additional debt, you know, what happens if I get into a Chapter 13 and I just can't do it? You know, I just can't make my regular house payment plus my Chapter 13 payment. Then what happens?
Well, if you can't make the Chapter 13 payment, it is possible to convert from Chapter 13 to a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Many of the people that come to me are in a house that they just simply cannot afford. If you cannot afford the payments in the long run, you will lose the house. So for many people, what they are doing is they can give themselves enough time to find another house by delaying the foreclosure proceeding a little bit. It may be that when you first get the foreclosure proceeding filed against you, that you file an answer. We file answers all the time to these foreclosures proceedings to give you a little bit more time in the home. As you get closer to the foreclosure sale, and it takes about 6 months between the time you're sued for foreclosure to the time that there's a sale date, rather than getting a default and have the sale occur in 2 or 3 months, it may be that you file an answer and you fight it a little bit to where it takes 6 months to a year or longer. As you get closer to that sale date, then you file a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Filing a Chapter 7 bankruptcy will give you, on the average, at least an additional 6 months in that home. Well, because it will temporarily stop the foreclosure sale. They've got to go back to court. They've got to start part of the foreclosure process up all over again. And the time that it takes them to do that is at least an additional 6 months. So that's an additional 6 months of free rent by filing a Chapter 7 bankruptcy.
So I could start out a Chapter 13 and see if I can make it. And then if I can't make it, then I would be allowed to convert it to a Chapter 7?
Yes, there is. And one of the beautiful parts about that is when we changed the code in 2005, the bankruptcy court started what's called the means test. The means test is a short financial statement that's made where they look at your minimum income. And people that make the average income, average household income for your size family or less, can file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy automatically. But if you make more than the average income for your size family, then there's a presumption that you're supposed to be in a Chapter 13. You're making more than the average income. There should be something left, perhaps, that you could pay towards your creditors. Well, the second half of the means test looks at something else. It looks at your income minus your necessary and secured expenses. And after looking at your necessary and secured expenses, it may be that you still cannot afford a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. You still may only be able to afford a Chapter 7. There's no money left over to repay your creditors in the Chapter 13. So if you file as a Chapter 13, you don't have to go through this means test. You can file as a Chapter 13, try it. If it doesn't work, you file it then as a Chapter 7 by converting to a Chapter 7. But if you file as a Chapter 7, you have to do the means test. And the means test says we look at your average income. If your average income is greater than what it's supposed to be for your size family in your state and county, then you are supposed to be in a Chapter 13. Second half of the means test then goes back and looks at the secured necessary expenses. It may be that you have medical expenses. It may be that you have other expenses for daycare or other things that causes a hardship for your family, or it causes you to spend so much that you have nothing left over for a Chapter 13. Mm-hmm. And you're able to file a Chapter 7 automatically with the means test anyway. Okay.
Now, I'm married. Does my husband have to file with me, or can I file a bankruptcy all by myself?
You can file jointly, or you can file separately. Okay? There's no problem in filing separately. But the means test always looks at your household income. So it looks at both you and your husband's income. But if you decide to file just yourself, you can file today, and your husband could even file a separate petition later on, which would delay the foreclosure process out even farther, okay? So there are some people that still chain file. One of the changes in the 2005 code was that it attempted to get rid of people filing one bankruptcy after another. It was under the old code that a person could file a Chapter 13, get a discharge, walk out of Chapter 13 court, file another Chapter 13 and another and another and another.
Wow.
Whereas now, the code is supposed to discourage that. However, in certain cases, for instance, you're unable to pay student loans or you're unable to pay income tax debts and it creates a special problem, you can still file and you still chain file Chapter 13s and Chapter 7s and 13s for priority debts. And quite often we will have people that will file as a Chapter 7 bankruptcy and attempt to turn, they'll get their discharge in their Chapter 7, not owe any unsecured debt, and then file a Chapter 13 immediately after that in order to save their home, and they don't need a discharge in the second Chapter 13, they're just catching up their home mortgage payments. So none of the money that they're paying in to the Chapter 13 goes to the unsecured debt, it's all going to the home mortgages.
So I could file a Chapter 7 and get rid of all these credit cards, and then after that, I could file a Chapter 13 with just the house, so that would make my Chapter 13 payment a lot smaller.
Yes, it would mean that you wouldn't have to pay back any of the unsecured debt
and all, in the Chapter 13. And everything going in the Chapter 13 would go towards the house.
All of these things are possibilities, but you have to look at how your budget is. It may be that as a chapter, that you make so little money that there is no way for you to file this as a Chapter 13 and pay back your unsecured debts. But after filing the Chapter 7, you would be able to file it as a Chapter 13 and catch up the mortgage payment because there's no unsecured debts to pay.
So it sounds like that everyone's bankruptcy is just a little bit different depending on their particular situation, and what they do could be different from what somebody else does, because it all depends on what my income is and my expenses, right?
Many of the rules are the same for whoever files, okay? Everybody gets to keep the same amount of equity in their property. Everybody gets to keep to use many of the same rules, but you're absolutely right. Nobody's budget is the same. Nobody's expenses is the same. Some people will have $800 per month in medical expenses going out for a family of four. The next person may not even have $100 going out for their medical expenses. So we really have to look at the individual budgets to see whether or not you're in a Chapter 7 or if you're in a Chapter 13, whether or not you happen to fall under these guidelines or those guidelines as to what's right for you and what you have to file.
Well, a friend told me that that they come in and take all your stuff, TV, and what stuff do you get to keep? What do you have to surrender over to the court?
Well, naturally, if you had a Rolls Royce sitting in the driveway and it's paid for, you have that car that you could surrender. You could use a reasonable car to get back and forth to work, and that Rolls Royce sitting in the driveway could be sold in order to pay your creditors. Each state has different exemptions. Here in Kentucky, until 2005, we had the state Kentucky exemptions that we used, and you were only able to keep $5,000 in equity in your home. After 2005, we switched to the federal exemptions here in the state of Kentucky. Now you can keep up to $20,000 worth of equity in your home. There's approximately a $3,500 exemption for your car. There's a $1,000 wildcard exemption. If you don't have any equity in your home or you don't have a home, you can use one half of the homestead exemption of $20,000. In other words, you can use $10,000 towards a wildcard exemption of any kind of property. So you could technically have a $13,500 car. You could use the $10,000 wildcard exemption, and you could use a $3,500 car exemption. Stack those two together and keep a $13,500 car. There's almost an unlimited exemption towards your IRA. or your retirement benefits. There's a $1,750 exemption towards jewelry. There's a $10,000 exemption towards your household goods. It's relatively rare for me to find anybody that has property that they're going to lose unless they have a substantial amount of equity in their home. Now, occasionally it is true that there is somebody who loses their car or loses their home because the lender forgot to file the mortgage, or the lender, they bought a $30,000 car and the bank forgot to file their lien against the car. If there's no lien on your car title, it may be that when you file bankruptcy that suddenly the bankruptcy court is the only one that has a lien against your car. At the moment of filing bankruptcy, basically the trustee is the same as somebody who has sued you and has the ability to put a lien against your house or your car. If there's no equity in your house, no equity in your car, then the trustee doesn't want the house or the car. However, if the bank forgot to file its mortgage, if the bank forgot to file its lien against the car, then the trustee stands in the same shoes as somebody who sued you. And since the bank hasn't filed its lien against the car, it's possible to lose the car. In the 20 years that I have been filing bankruptcies, I've heard many people say, geez, I lost my house or I lost my car because I filed bankruptcy. The only reason I've ever seen people lose their house or lose their car because they filed bankruptcy is because they didn't make the payments, or because of the fact that the bank didn't file the lien or the mortgage against the house or the car.
Yeah, I guess there's no way to find out about that until the trustee uncovers it or something.
Well, actually, it's quite simple. All you have to do, when you file bankruptcy, I'm going to ask for certain documents from you. If you go to my website, there's a little list of the documents that I need. I need your copy of your deed and mortgage. I need a copy of your car titles. I need a copy of your last six months of wages, the last 2 years of income taxes, and this is all on a list. When we look at your car title and we look at your mortgage, on the face of the car title and on the face of the mortgage, it shows whether or not that mortgage is filed. It shows whether or not that car lien is filed. So if you don't have a car lien that was properly filed, or you don't have a mortgage that's properly filed, you may have a problem, but that's extremely rare. Okay. How often does the bank not file its deed, its mortgage or file its car lien?
I would think pretty rare. Now, I've got, other than the situation with my house, I do have some other issues. I've got some taxes that I might owe on, and I think I have a really old student loan. And then I had this car wreck not too long ago that they've been bugging me about. What do I do about that?
Well, there are certain debts that cannot be bankrupted. These debts that cannot be bankrupted tend to be student loans. It tends to be alimony and child support, and income tax is less than 3 years old. But I want you to think of it this way. I want you to imagine that pretty much every debt you can imagine can be bankrupted. For instance, even though alimony and child support cannot be bankrupted, technically, if you pay back the alimony or child support in Chapter 13, it's paid back as a priority debt. And because it's a priority debt, it's paid ahead of secured debts and unsecured debts. So even though you've not been able to pay it perhaps in the past because credit card companies were garnishing wages or something else, you can certainly file a Chapter 13, and the very first person that's going to be paid is your child support. And for some people, that's important. It may be that you have income taxes. You may have been sued by the IRS. If you have income taxes that are less than 3 years old and you filed your income taxes 2 years or more ago and you've not had an assessment in the last 240 days, your income taxes are fully bankruptable just like any other debt. They're no different from a credit card debt. You can bankrupt your income tax debts, okay? They just have to be 3 years old. And you have to have actually filed the returns. If you don't file the returns, it's the same as fraud, okay? And because it's the same as fraud, you don't get to bankrupt it ever. If you fail to file your income tax returns for a long period of time, eventually the IRS will do what's called a substitute for return. That's where the IRS itself files an income tax return for you, and then they usually file it for a much larger sum than you would normally make. And if you do not protest it, then it automatically becomes due, and you can't ever bankrupt it, because there's a special rule that says that if you don't file the return, you don't file it properly, that it's not bankruptable. Okay, so it's very important to always file your income taxes. But income taxes certainly can be bankrupted. You just have to wait long enough. Then there are other debts you may be concerned about. For instance, many people often come to us and they've not had their insurance. Their insurance lapsed. They had a car accident, and now they owe $30,000 because they wrecked somebody else's car, and the insurance company has taken away their driver's license. Well, what you may want to do is, if you file bankruptcy, you can get that driver's license back.
How does that work?
Basically, you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, and upon discharge, we fax a copy of the discharge to the Division of Driver's Licensing, and the Driver's Licensing Bureau simply reinstates your license. You go down to the local office and ask for it to be reinstated. Any type of debt that you can imagine pretty much can be bankrupted. Even student loan debts, it is possible in certain circumstances to bankrupt student loans debts if you qualify for a hardship discharge. Every exception that people say can't be this particular debt can't be bankrupted has its own exception. With student loans, if you can show that paying the debt back would be a hardship to you and your family, that you've made every effort to pay it back, that you can't pay it back presently, and at no time in the future pretty much you'll ever reasonably be able to pay it back, and that it creates a hardship for you and your family, then there's a three-part Bruner test that the court looks at, and they may very well give you a discharge for your student loans. It's become very difficult to get that discharge, but I talked to many people about getting it, and there are a few people that I have obtained the student loan discharge for.
Well, how long does all of this take from, you know, beginning to end?
Well, almost all Chapter 13 bankruptcies now are for about 5 years, okay? Mm-hmm. However, the Chapter 7 bankruptcy is over rather quickly. Chapter 7 bankruptcy ends up costing about $1,000 for a single and $1,200 for a couple. There's a $300 filing fee. Once the case is filed, you have to have a small little class before you file the bankruptcy. It costs about $50 to take that class. It can be done over the internet or it can be done over the phone. And there's a second class that you have to take after you have filed bankruptcy. You're supposed to take that class within 45 days, but you certainly must take it before discharge and get your class certification filed. Anyway, the bankruptcy in Chapter 7 takes about 4 months. You'll file the bankruptcy, you'll go to court about 6 weeks later. You should get that second class taken during that 45-day period of time. And then creditors are allowed a period of time to file an objection to your discharge. For instance, if you happen to charge over $1,000 on your credit card, or you take a cash advance of over $500, or you buy, you happen to buy luxury goods over $750 within a short period just before filing bankruptcy, it may be that amount is not bankruptable. It's not that you have to pay the entire credit card back. It's just that you have to pay back that part that you took out, where the court's going to assume that you knew that you were about to file bankruptcy and you made that one last grab for that money. Okay, that's basically looked at as a fraudulent conveyance where you have gone in, you knew you were filing bankruptcy, you took one last grab, and they're going to require you to pay that one creditor back, that small amount that you took out that's extra. In other words, you only have to repay what you got caught with. Okay, now if you happen to convey to your brother, let's say you sell that Rolls Royce to your brother for $500. That's called a preferential transfer. It's not a fraudulent transfer. It's called a preferential transfer, where the brother or the creditor got more than they would have normally if the Chapter 7 had just been filed. Okay, what has happened is perhaps that brother gave you $500 and the Rolls Royce is worth $50,000. It's not a arm's length transaction that would normally occur, and it's a payment to an insider, a close person, or it may be that the bank has garnished your wages, or the bank has garnished your checking account. And if there is a transfer of over $600 in value, the trustee can go in and can avoid that transaction and obtain that Rolls Royce, or can get back that $5,000 that was garnished out of your checking account just before you filed bankruptcy. But the trustee can only go in a short period of time just before the bankruptcy was filed. The trustee can sometimes, in some cases, go back as far as 2 to 5 years if it's an insider or relative, but normally if it's a creditor that's just garnished your checking account, he can only go back about 6 months to a year.
Well, this has been great information. What else do I need to know? I'm sure I'm not haven't asked all the questions that I need. This is a lot of information. Is there anything real important any question that I didn't ask?
Well, you know, there are a lot of other things that you have to look out for. For instance, if you're filing a bankruptcy, please be aware that sometimes people will have property that they get after they have filed bankruptcy. Okay, it may be that you get an inheritance within 6 months after you filed bankruptcy, or that you bought a lottery ticket before you filed bankruptcy, but you got the winnings later on. Essentially, the bankruptcy court normally only looks at the assets that you had before you filed bankruptcy, but at the same time, it can look forward in time, and certain things can still be taken after you filed bankruptcy, like you get an inheritance within 6 months after that. Okay.
So how would the court know that I got an inheritance 6 months later?
Normally, they're not going to know, of course. Okay.
So they don't actively continue looking at your assets after the discharge?
Well, you certainly should tell the court if it happens, okay, but the court normally doesn't monitor that too terribly much, okay. The trustee may find out about it and may ask you for that inheritance, okay. There are a number of things that you need to be aware of. First of all, it's very important that you list all of your creditors. If you fail to list the creditor, then that can cause certain problems. It may be that you are denied a mortgage later on, and it's a little bit expensive to go back in and add a creditor on. You can always add a creditor on as long as he existed at the time you filed bankruptcy. So if you forget a creditor and it's 3 months down the road into your bankruptcy and you're adding that creditor on before the discharge, it might cost you $100 or $125 to add that creditor.
Would it delay anything at that point?
It's not going to delay anything, but there's a substantial problem if you try to add the creditor on after your bankruptcy is over, because you have to pay a new filing fee.
Oh.
And the filing fee alone is $300.
Right.
And then your attorney has to reopen the case, has to file the amendment to add on the creditor, and has to go through a substantial bit of trouble in order to get that debt added back on. And if it costs $500 or $600 to add that debt back on, it's certainly very important to make sure that all your creditors are listed up front. We usually tell people to get a copy of their credit bureau report to ensure that they've got all of their creditors listed at the time of filing the bankruptcy, but it's certainly possible that you may forget one. You can add one on later on.
Where do I go to get a copy of my credit report?
Well, on our website, we've got a lot of information. We've got a bankruptcy manual for you to read. There's PowerPoint demonstrations. And you can also put in all of your input, all of your debts and your assets, and prepare a bankruptcy petition on our website. Now, it doesn't actually prepare the petition, but it does allow you to input your debts at home and your information at home, so you don't have to come into my office and sit there in the office for 2 hours with the secretary while she inputs that information, or a paralegal while she inputs that information. Rather, instead, you can sit down with me for 2 hours and we can have a wonderful talk about how we're planning your bankruptcy, rather, and you can sit at home and do this in the leisure of your home. If you come to a point that you need to stop and you need to come back to it, you can sit there in your pajamas at your computer and do this at home and come back to it, rather than having to make another appointment to come back. Geez, I forgot this documentation or this information, and I'm going to have to come in a second time. So really, it's better to put it in at the office.
So on your website, then there's a link to
order a link,
credit report.
There's a link to ordering credit bureau report, and it's absolutely free.
Oh, great.
I just send people to another website that you're allowed to get a free credit bureau report from freecreditreport.com. It's fairly simple. Please don't order any of the services where you pay $25 each month for them to look at your credit bureau report. That really isn't that helpful. Experian and all the other companies actually do pay these companies to give you a free credit bureau report. It can be mailed to you, or you can download it as a PDF file for your own records. And please review it. You want to make sure that your credit bureau report is reviewed for accuracy. If you've got mistakes on your credit bureau report after you have filed bankruptcy, you want to correct those mistakes. We've got letters on our website that allow you to send information off to the credit bureau reports that you've got information on my credit bureau report that's wrong. I don't owe this debt. I've never done business with this company. About 40% of the people that are out there will have information on their credit bureau report that is so completely inaccurate that it would keep them from getting a house or getting a car loan. And one of the things you want to do after you have filed your bankruptcy is you want to have good credit in the future. That very much affects whether or not you get a reasonable insurance rate. It affects the cost of your credit, and it's important for your financial health that you have a good credit bureau report, okay? Because you're going to want to buy cars, you're going to want to buy houses in the future. It may be that you've gone through a divorce, maybe that you've had an illness, your company has gone out of business. Many of the bankruptcies are filed due to something suddenly happening to somebody. Well, a bankruptcy really is a fresh start. It's a time for you to sit down with a new budget and to have a new life and a new future, one that's financially successful. You would be surprised at the number of millionaires that probably live next door to you. There are many people that are teachers, that are bus drivers, that have learned to live on 90% of their income and take the other 10% of that and bank it away. Those people go on to financial success. They're the people that learn to budget. And that is why we have come up with bankruptcy court and the ability of people to file a Chapter 13. This forces people to live on a budget for 5 years. They get in the habit of it, and hopefully they go on to the rest of their life having a successful future. However, at the same time, we know that many of the same problems that cause people to file bankruptcy, such as being in poor health, are continuing to cause them problems even after they've filed their Chapter 13. It is still true that about 80 to 90% of all the Chapter 13s do fail. That is why you are able to convert from a Chapter 13 to a 7 if you need to. You're also able to get a hardship discharge. If you're not able to make the payments in your Chapter 13, many people end up getting a hardship discharge. They've paid 70 or 80% of their Chapter 13 off, but they get to that final year, they've had another setback financially, and you can apply for a hardship discharge and go ahead and get a hardship discharge. Okay. Bankruptcy is a wonderful tool for doing many, many things. For instance, you may have been sued. You may have a judgment lien against your house. If you do have a judgment lien against your house, we can get rid of that judgment lien by filing basically a motion to get rid of that lien. We will have to have an appraisal of your house, okay? And there's a little bit of an additional cost. But rather than paying that judgment lien for $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 and having it accrue interest at 12% over the years, it's a lot easier to file a motion to get rid of that judgment lien. I don't know if you happen to have a judgment lien against your house, but if you've been sued, you should know it. And please be sure to tell me, because if you tell me, then I can get rid of it. but if you don't tell me, then I have no idea if you have a judgment lien against your house or not, and there's no way for me to really know.
Right.
And it's a relatively small additional cost to get rid of that judgment lien. Also, a Chapter 13 is a wonderful tool to get rid of some certain second mortgages. Many people that come to me also have a second mortgage, and that second mortgage may be totally unsecured. That second mortgage, let's say that you owe $100,000 on your first mortgage on your house, but due to the problems of the last few years and people have had houses that have actually lost value, that $100,000 house may only be a $90,000 house now. And the first mortgage may be $100,000. The second mortgage may be a horrible predatory loan that maybe you owe another $20,000 or $30,000 on. We can treat that second mortgage just like a credit card. And we can file a Chapter 13 and perhaps pay that second mortgage 5 cents or 10 cents on the dollar. And all you have to do is pay the first mortgage and keep your house.
Wow.
So we treat it as a second or third, we treat it as a unsecured lien for second or thirds many times. And at the end of the Chapter 13, if you successfully make all of the payments into the Chapter 13, the court orders the mortgage to be removed at the end of that Chapter 13. If the lender refuses to remove that lien, we can sue the attorney that filed the lien against the home, or we can sue the mortgage company that filed the lien against the home, and we can recover your attorney fees for getting that mortgage removed. All we need to do is to make sure that the language outlining those provisions are in the Chapter 13 plan, and file, of course, a motion to do that along with your Chapter 13 plan.
And they consider the value as of when you filed, because I'm just thinking that if you keep your house for 5 years, the value 5 years later may be enough to support the second.
No, they consider the value at the time you filed.
Wow.
Okay, it's true that the value of the home may increase 5 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the homes that maybe they were valued for $200,000 5 years ago, but now they're selling for $150,000.
Mm-hmm.
These homes may go back up to $200,000, okay?
Right.
But we look at the value of the home at the time the Chapter 13 was filed, because you could have taken the option to let the house go back in foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
You could have given it back to the mortgage company, and you chose not to do that by filing a Chapter 13 and making those payments. That second mortgage company got more money than they would have if you had just let the house go back.
Oh, I see.
Okay?
I see. Well, this is great, great information. I really do appreciate you taking your time to answer all these questions and sitting down with me. Let's get started.
Well, let me go over still a couple of other things that I need to go over with you.
Okay.
Okay. If you are filing this as a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you do need to know the difference between a reaffirmation, a redemption, and surrender.
Oh, okay. What are those?
Well, when you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you have three options. Number one, you can always let the property go back and owe nothing.
Okay.
Let's say you've got a car and it's a total lemon. It's a horrible car. It doesn't run and get you to work safely and back. You certainly want to let that go back to the lender and owe nothing. Okay. But it may be that instead you have a perfectly good car. You can afford the payments. Payments are $150 a month. It gives you a decent car to go back and forth to work. The car's worth $15,000 and you only owe $12 on it. Okay? If you had to go replace it, you'd have to pay a higher interest rate, whatever else. You want to keep your car loan. You get along with your bank. You're not having any problems. You just want to continue making the payments. In that case, you want to sign what's called a reaffirmation agreement. You are reaffirming. You're agreeing to pay the bank. Okay? That's what a reaffirmation agreement is. At the moment of filing bankruptcy, the lender does not have the right to earn money from you anymore or to attempt to collect from you anymore. By signing the reaffirmation agreement, you go right back to owing. If you decide not to make the payments on that car, they can repo the car. They can sue you for the deficiency, for the difference between what the car sells for and what is owed on the debt. So generally, you don't want to sign a reaffirmation agreement unless you absolutely know that you're going to make the rest of the payments. You would only sign a reaffirmation agreement in a Chapter 7. This does not apply to a Chapter 13. Also, you may have the same general situation, but you don't want to sign the reaffirmation agreement. It may be that you owe $30,000 on a $15,000 car. You owe far more than what the car is worth. If you owe far more than what the car is worth, then what you really want to do is you want to file what's called a redemption agreement. There's a bank called 722 Redemption that really is a U.S. bank. And what they do is they will lend to you money so that you can redeem your car. A redemption is where you pay the bank what the car is worth. Presently, we tend to be looking at private party and retail sales value. But if the car is only worth $15,000 and you owe $30,000 on it, you certainly don't want to pay $30,000 for a $15,000 car. I'd much rather pay $15,000 for that car, since it's worth $15,000. And I may even pay a high interest rate. I may be willing to pay 21% interest to keep the car, so I've got a way to get back and forth to work. But I'd rather pay 21% interest on $15,000 than to pay back $30,000. Yeah. So redemption and reaffirmation are things that you have to choose, and you have to know what you're doing, and you're going to have to do that within 45 days after you file if you are filing as a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Okay? Be sure to discuss that with me and make sure that we do that before your 341 meeting, because at the end of 45 days, you are required to have done this or your stay terminates as to that vehicle.
Well, what's a 341 meeting?
The 341 meeting really is not a hearing. It's not a trial before a judge. Instead, it's a lot more like a deposition where another attorney like myself looks over your petition to make sure that it's accurate. It's far more like a deposition. You'll be there for about 5 minutes, and the bankruptcy trustee will ask you some very simple questions. What's your name? What's your address? What's your Social Security number? Did you list all your debts? Did you list all your assets as well? He's looking over your petition to make sure that your petition is accurate. The bankruptcy court only gives him about $60 to $75 to look over your petition to make sure that it's accurate and that there's no assets to go that need to be taken to, for the benefit of creditors. He only wants to devote a short time to it. That's why you want the accuracy of your petition to be perfect. He should be able to understand it within a few minutes of looking at it. And it also requires all the supporting documentation so that he knows that the information in that petition is true. That's why we ask for so much supporting documentation. That's why the petition has to be perfect. Try to imagine that here's an attorney that's making $300 an hour. He's only being paid $60 or $75. You've caused him 2 or 3 hours additional work. He's probably not going to like you after that. Okay? He will probably remember you and make your life most difficult.
Okay? But do I have to bring anything to the 341 meeting?
Well, you do have to bring your photo ID, usually your driver's license, and your Social Security card, or proof of your Social Security number. Okay? It also is very helpful if you have a car to bring proof of your insurance. We have a local rule, and most of the bankruptcy courts have the same local rule, saying that you have to provide proof of your insurance if the lender asks for it. And many times the lender is asking for it. The lender wants to make sure that you're not driving his car around uninsured and that it's that he's going to be fully protected. He's already worried that you're not going to make the payments on it. And if you show him that you're going to pay him for the car or you're going to make the payments on it by reaffirming or redeeming, and you're still driving around, but it's fully insured, so he's going to be fully protected in case something happens to it, then the lender is not too terribly concerned, okay? But those are certainly things that you want to do. The creditor should stop calling shortly after you have filed bankruptcy, but there's always going to be some creditors that will continue to call simply because they didn't get the notice of the 341 meeting.
What
I would make a copy or several copies of the 341 notice.
That's something that I'm going to get in the mail?
Yes. The 341 notice is the notice of the hearing. It lets you know that you have a hearing to go to, and make several copies of it. And if you happen to have a creditor that calls, you might want to fax a copy of that 341 notice to the creditor so that you can show that he got a copy.
And then they'll stop calling me?
Yes, he's supposed to stop calling you. If he continues to call you after that, he may have violated the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act only covers third-party collectors. It only covers bill collectors. Mm-hmm. It doesn't cover the original maker of the debt. But the bankruptcy court stay that prevents them from calling you does cover and prevent them from calling you, okay? You can collect damages from them directly for violating the original court order as a contempt order. You can't collect damages from all of them under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. You have to only show that they received notice, then they ignored it, and they continue to call anyway, or attempt to collect. And you can recover actual damages, attorney fees, and in some cases, punitive damages.
Gosh, this is a lot of information.
Well, you know, I know it's a lot to remember. That's why I have the PowerPoint and the manual on there. And I always suggest that everybody read through that manual just to get general information. And there's going to be people that happen to have certain issues in one area and not issues in the other. For instance, if you happen to have a Chapter 13, at some point all these creditors are going to file claims. And when they file their claims, you want to look over those claims. And there's going to be some people that have filed claims in your cases that shouldn't be paid. You may not even owe the debt that they're claiming that you owe. So after you have gone through your 341 hearing in your Chapter 13, it's very helpful to sit down with your attorney, review the claims, and to make sure that those claims are valid claims and that they're not overstated.
Now, will I get that in the mail if they file a claim, or is that something that's just sent to my attorney?
No, that's something that your attorney receives electronically.
Oh.
But here in the Western District of Kentucky, for instance, the attorney will file what's called a schedule of allowed claims, and he'll tell the court, we wish to agree to paying these claims, but we're going to object to these.
Oh.
Well, he'll agree to all of them if you don't go in and review those claims. Mm-hmm. Over in the Eastern District of Kentucky, it's entirely different. Instead, the trustee reviews those claims, and the trustee may not have the personal relationship with you that your attorney has. And if you don't sit down and review these claims yourself, it may be that you're paying claims that don't even belong to you.
How do I know if I'm in the Western District or the Eastern District?
Well, the Western District is those counties that are in the western side of Kentucky.
Oh, so it's based on
Louisville.
Where I live.
Yeah, it's based upon the county that you live at.
Oh.
And it would be normally from Louisville West. If you live from Shelby, Frankfort, Lexington East here in Kentucky, it would be the Eastern District. I also practice in the Southern District of Indiana. So all of those counties that are south of Indianapolis, I tend to practice in as well. The Southern District of Indiana has different exemptions from the state of Kentucky. They do not use the federal exemptions. The federal exemptions are used by about half the states. Indiana does not allow you to keep as much property as Kentucky does. But all of the other rules are the same. And the general idea of the fact that you're allowed exempted property, you're allowed to keep enough property to start life over again those ideas are the same in all the states. It's just that some of the states have larger exemptions than others. For instance, it may be that you're able to keep $200,000 worth of equity in real estate in Florida, but only $20,000 under the federal rules here in the state of Kentucky.
So the state laws preempt the federal laws on that
the,
kind of thing?
The state decides how much the exemptions are.
Mm-hmm.
And the state can choose to follow its own rules, or it can follow the federal rules.
Oh.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Half the states follow the federal rules, and the other half of the states approximately use their own rules. In Indiana, they choose not to use as much as the federal rules would have allowed them to.
Oh, I see.
OK. okay. But it's certainly possible to have a life after bankruptcy. I have a wife, Nancy, that does mortgages, and quite often many of my people, even though they've let property go back or they've kept property, they'll refinance property or they've got new houses and new mortgages with her. She's been around for over 20 years, and she has helped many of my clients to obtain mortgages. There are special programs with Kentucky Housing Corporation and other government agencies that are a little bit more fair than some of the other mortgage companies that people might normally do business with after they have filed bankruptcy. As long as you've kept your credit good and you've paid your debts on time for a year before you have applied for these mortgages, and it's been a couple of years after your discharge in a Chapter 7, or 3 to 5 years after a foreclosure, then you should be able to qualify for a mortgage, usually within 6 to 12 months after you have gotten your discharge in a Chapter 7. You're going to be able to end up getting a car. So getting a car, of course, is going to be far more easy than getting a house, where they want to see a longer period of time of financial responsibility being displayed.
Great. Well, this has been really, really helpful. I really do appreciate you taking the time. I guess what I need to do is just go home and get all my stuff together and get on your website and get the ball rolling.
Yes, if you'll go ahead, look at the website, there's a list of what documents I need. Mm-hmm. You can put your information in online, mm-hmm. okay, on the website, so that you spend a lot less time in our office, and it's a lot more convenient to gather this stuff at home.
And so once I gather all my paperwork and then go to the website and enter all the information in, then I should probably call you and set up an appointment?
Yeah, just call, give the documents to my secretary, who will look them over for completeness to make sure that you've got all your documents, make an appointment, come on in, and we will talk about, once I know a little bit more about your financial situation, we'll talk a little bit more then whether or not a 7 or a 13 is proper for you. It may be that there are other alternatives, even debt management that you might want to look into. There's a certain amount of cost to a bankruptcy. And if you're paying out $1,500 for a bankruptcy and all you owe is $1,500 in debt, maybe you need to look in debt management if there's just some small amount. But there are costs and advantages and disadvantages to any way that you choose to handle these situations. I have seen people before that have gone into debt management and then ended up having a huge tax problem because they had debt forgiveness. If you remember, we talked about the fact that if somebody forgives you of a debt, that then you have an IRS tax problem. It's earned income. You've also got problems where I've had financial planners before encourage people to cash in their retirement, but then they don't have any retirement savings after they've cashed in their retirement, and they may have to file bankruptcy anyway. So you really have to make sure that this is a objective decision, not an emotional one, okay? You don't want to cash in your retirement. You don't want to put a second mortgage on your home if that's not what's going to be the best decision for you to solve your financial problems.
And once you know what my situation is, then you're better able to tell, or we can discuss what's my best option, my best alternative.
Correct. And I'm not the only one that looks over this paperwork. It's not just the trustee. The U.S. Department of Justice looks over each and every Chapter 13 or Chapter 7 bankruptcy that's filed. They look it over for accuracy to make sure that the attorney's doing very accurate work. This drove off about half of the attorneys after 2005. In that it's difficult to file these petitions and to be accurate. This is not something that you want to do yourself. There are many pitfalls. You remember we were talking about income taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's very difficult to compute the exact number of days that it takes and the amount of time that it takes in order to bankrupt income taxes.
Right.
If you miss it by one day, you miss the entire thing. There's no such thing as good faith. Geez, I thought I was doing well. You either get it right or you don't. And if you're stuck with a $25,000 debt because you missed it by one day.
I would never try to do this myself. My gosh, there are so many different things to consider. I just wouldn't be able to handle it.
Well, just remember that there's a lot of information on my website that shows you step by step exactly how to do it. And I'm happy to sit down with you for a couple hours to show you and to talk to you about the individual problems.
Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Okay.